after that.
Input. Opinions are important, as Olivia noted, and the community has a wide array of opinions. Observations are important. Any input is welcome. But as I've noted in prior sessions too, facts are critical. All input is welcome, but in terms of assessing the implementation, facts are going to be critical. So please provide those along as well. Mikey.
Hi, my name is Mikey O'Connor. I'm addressing the question about the policy development process, and I have, I don't really have facts, but I've got a bunch of diagrams that describe the working group process in the GNSO. There's sort of an ideal version and a current version and a bunch of related issues that I would be happy to share with the group and expand on. It's kind of hard to do it on the fly in front of a microphone, but are you all planning to dig into the working group process at all? Is that part of the thought of that particular question?
Thank you for that, Mikey. And yes, the PDP, which is an element of one of the paragraphs of 9.1, has been the focus of discussion. I think I'm sensing a signal from the review team that that's an area where we'll spend some focus and perhaps develop some recommendations. The working groups are important parts of that structure and that dynamic, so I would think that that type of input would be very useful for us to evolve our thinking. So that's very welcome. To just provide some other thoughts and early discussions, and perhaps that'll stir some questions. One issue that the team has focused on already is the issue of metrics. ATRT1, other than some implementation deadlines or dates for implementation in our recommendations, did not develop metrics, which are useful tools, obviously, to measure how the organization is doing in implementing recommendations. That has been a point of discussion with the group so far. I think a recognition that more needs to be done on that front this time. For ATRT1, there was a consideration that it was better for the organization to develop the metrics than perhaps the ATRT1, who were not necessarily experts in that subject area. But in interacting with Fadi in Los Angeles, as he has done often, being very open and candid, identified the fact that with the exception of hitting certain dates, that full metrics have not been developed. And Fadi made a commitment to this review team that that metrics would be developed for the recommendations of the prior teams. So we have that commitment from him. We do recognize that's a critical aspect, though, for our recommendations going forward. That's one area that's under discussion and would love to hear from the community on that front. Anybody else on the review team in terms of issues that of early focus? Oh, please.
Rinalia Abdulrahim from the At-Large Advisory Committee. I have a question. Currently, there is a survey on ICANN's reputation and image, and I was wondering whether the input from that survey will be brought into the ATRT2's consideration or whether you are providing guidance in terms of what kind of input that particular survey should be garnering. Thank you.
Steve, do you have any background on the survey to offer, just for context?
There is a survey. I don't have the next layer of detail to share. Sally owns that, and I'm sure if we ask, we can find out what went into it, what came out of it. The rest of the question, I think, is what are we going to do about it and how are we going to respond or suggest anything? And so probably we want to get a look at that and then we can have some thought about the rest of that.
Sure. Thank you. Alan.
Thank you. The survey won't be completed for another couple of months, but given that one of the things we're looking at is legitimacy of ICANN and how it's viewed, I don't think we could ignore it. Exactly what we'll do with it is a different matter.
So I, as I said, I'm not fully up to speed. You're saying it's not done. I thought there was some output from it already, but I could be wrong.
We were told by the writers that this was a preliminary view of it, and there would be still more work to be done.
So that would triangulate between my thinking that there was some output and it not being done. Yep, good.
Denise.
Hi. There's a session in the auditorium today at 12:30 to provide some initial information about a reputational survey that was conducted by ICANN. And so there'll be public information on that.
Thank you.
Yes, it's Olivia here. Denise, I was wondering whether the survey was completed or was it still ongoing? Rinalia?
Thank you. The ALAC received a briefing about this survey. Like Alan said, the initial phase involving about 41 interviews had been completed. That is supposed to be a directional input, and the company that had been engaged will continue with further and more quantitative information gathering. So it will continue for the next few months, and I would expect that the results will be reported at the upcoming ICANN meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. And in terms of your question, the review team will welcome any inputs. What we ask is that the community, in thinking about providing inputs, reference paragraph 9.1 of the Affirmation of Commitments, which presents the scope of our work. And inputs, obviously, that tie to that are what we can use in our assessments. Inputs that are outside of that scope of work or outside of that scope of work. So I guess a question to you would be, taking a look at that survey, does it provide data, opinion about accountability and transparency? Does it tie to the affirmation of commitments? By all means, please.
As I recall, there were 8 specific areas, and one explicitly was on transparency and possibly also accountability. What I'm saying is that there needs to be a bit of an alignment in terms of input gathering so that you get maximum input.
Thank you. We'll look forward to that. So we have the issue of effectiveness of the GAC. We have metrics in early discussion. We as a team are discussing in terms of touchstones for our work, accountability, transparency, and legitimacy as touchstones that would be themes we look to in all the assessments and implementation and recommendations. The other thing we need to look at is the overall review process. How have these review processes worked? Have they been useful? Have they been well managed? Could they be improved? That's an important area, and we need to weigh in not just with respect to what the other review teams have to say on that point, but the community. So I'd like to invite any observations now about the overall review processes. How have you perceived them? Have they been available? Have they been open? Is there more that could be done to make it more effective and useful to the community? I'd welcome any inputs on that front. Observations, positive or negative, about what's happened in the past?
Hi, Teresa Swinehart. Sorry, I couldn't help it. So I think the review processes are incredibly important, and the affirmation of commitments is incredibly important. But in the broader internet ecosystem, if I can use that terminology, I don't think people are aware of it, and I don't think people are aware of the significance of it. It's a multi-stakeholder process. It involves governments. It's a very, very unique process. But I think we need to get the word out about the significance of it. So how one does that, I don't know, but I just wanted to flag it as an important element.
Thank you, Teresa.
Mikey O'Connor again. The who is RT, who isn't one of my mainstream issues, and I don't follow it really closely, but there seems to be some turbulence, at least in the hallways, about the way that the recommendations that were made by that team were then adopted or not. And so If I were in your shoes as a committee, I'd at least put that on the list of things to take a look at, is sort of the process by which the recommendations from the various review teams turn into implementation tasks. Probably don't want to limit it to who is, but the who is one generated more chatter in the hallways for me.
Yeah, thank you. And to that point, we are going to be interacting with former members of the former review teams to get their views, but we can't stop there. We need to talk to the board. We need to talk to the community. So to the extent that there are views in the hallway that provide us some data or perception on that, that needs to come into the process as well. Thanks. Any other observations or questions about the review process as a whole or any of the prior review teams? Again, this is with a view toward improving accountability and transparency, and positive or negative. I guess if I were talking to you, Mikey, I'd say feel free to tell us we did a lousy job at this point and why. You know, how is the review process serving the community? The point that Teresa made about people out there don't know about this. That's something we've recognized. We've had the conversation about outreach. Again, this review team has a specific task and has to stay within its focus. But that disconnect between the outside world knowing that ICANN as an organization has this type of process is something we recognize needs to be addressed. Mikey.
This is Mikey again. I sort of want to come at this a different way. The way you're framing this is fine, but at the same time, it would be great to acknowledge the really great work that was done by all three of those teams. You know, I've been to a bunch of these public sessions with the committees, usually at the end, and it's usually a group of exhausted folks who've put together pretty amazing reports and done amazingly good work. And so if there would be a way to structure your information gathering to allow people to also point out the positive side, I think that would be good. You know, if you ask the question, tell us what's wrong, people will do that. If you ask the question, well, tell us what's wrong and right, you'll get a different set of stuff.
Thank you. We will do that. And to your point about asking what went right, we've already had some interaction with staff who's reporting in on implementation of prior recommendations who have said, look, we implemented this, and along the way, we recognized X that could be done better and started that. And that's really useful input because it's not just the black and white, did you implement recommendation 13? It's a dynamic within the organization. So yes to the positive input, and it's even more important than just provide us positive input because this is a dynamic and evolving and improving process. Thank you. Avery.
Two points I wanted to make. One is I actually, at least we tried to make the questions relatively neutral and ask people on a scale of X to, 1 to 10, how do you view the work? So if it came through as why did it go wrong, I think then perhaps we phrased the questions wrong, but perhaps, you know, it's just a way of reading. The other thing is, and it's something I actually want to thank people for, one of my favorite questions here is on the last page is, which questions did we forget to put on here? And then a second part of that is, how would you answer them? So indeed, in terms of to everyone who's basically come up with a question that we either didn't get right or a question that's missing, that is a wonderful thing to add to your responses. And then those are questions that can be followed up further. But please, when you add those questions, also answer them.
Thank you, Avery. Allen?
Thank you. I'm going to make a statement that Brian has made to the review committee a few times. And it's that many of the people on the committee have a long history in ICANN. We have our own views. We have a lot of baggage. To the extent possible, our position has to be reasonably impartial, and we need input. You should not assume that because your stakeholder group has a person on the committee who knows all of the woes from the perspective of your stakeholder group that you don't have to provide any input. That person is really not in a position to plea the cases of their stakeholder group or of the source organization, and we do need input from everyone if you want it to be considered fairly. Thank you.
So another issue that we've discussed in our early goings is the public interest. And this is probably my second attempt to provoke Steve Del Bianco out of his seat, metrics being the first. The issue of the public interest and what does that mean is in front of us. The first ATRT1 did not come up with a definition of the public interest. It was that team's conclusion that that was not a useful thing to do. But that question is before us. Again, we understand it's an important term. We understand it's a term that threads meaning through all of these things, and that's something that we will take on as well, in addition to the metrics issue. Anything else from the team members, from your own perspectives, issues that you think are worth bringing to the surface now? Olivier?
Thank you, Brian. I think one of the points that this team has really been thinking a lot about is especially the issue that was mentioned about outreach, how to get that input from not only the people that are sitting in this room or the people that are attending this meeting, but everyone even outside the walls here. So if you do have suggestions, we are very, very looking forward to hear them and to listen to them. We've been accused, we as an organization, ICANN, has been accused of looking too much at its own self from within. And it's also very important to find out what's the point of view outside these walls. So if you have suggestions, please send them to us.
I'd like to make another observation, too. And it came up, the NCUC invited us to meet with them, and so we did. And someone pointed out that the review teams themselves are maybe the only example in this entire ecosystem of all stakeholders on equal footing working together. We have government representatives, we have industry, we have civil society, and these teams work on an equal footing basis, collegially, and that's remarkable. And we were asked to somehow capture that and express that. It hadn't occurred to me until that person made that point. It really is true. That's how these teams work. So we intend in addressing how effective other review processes to note that and the importance of that. But the other thing I want to stress to everybody in the room, I am disappointed by the number of people who are in this room. My organization is involved in the new TLD process. We are as busy as everybody outside this room. All of us who participate in ICANN, who care passionately about this organization, should be in this room. This is a disappointment for me. This process matters. Please take this message outside of this room. Steve.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Steve Del Bianco with NetChoice. Public interest sure got my attention. Mission accomplished. And don't be disappointed. We did two panels in here today and had scarcely any more. I wanted to ask you about the public interest definition, because I just reread the document, and there's nothing in there yet saying that you're going to endeavor to help define or constrain public interest for the purpose of this. So do you need us to provide input at adding that to your terms of reference or to actually address it? What stage are you at about taking on that definition?
We're at the stage that the issue's been identified, that some people think that there would be utility in a definition and others do not. And that's exactly where we are. And I know that this conversation will continue as we go forward. The terms of reference and methodology document from the review team's point of view has been pretty much massaged to a near final state. But we will take input. We will take suggestions. And if there is a consensus on the group that there's some articulation of public interest that would be useful, that will happen. So the input would be welcome.
I think it's particularly appropriate. The affirmation that generates this whole review team does put a modifier in front of public interest. It calls it the global public interest, even though in our charter, the bylaws and articles, while public interest appears 12 times in total without ever sort of identifying whether it's constrained to the DNS or something broader than that. So we'll try that from the business constituency of suggesting it ought to be part of it, and then look forward to having input later on. Thank you.
Thank you. Joy.
Thanks. Joy Lidicott for the record. Just a couple of reflections. One is just following up on the point about public interest. Despite being a public law specialist for 25 years, I really would encourage you not to attempt to define public interest, not only because I think perhaps it isn't the best use of the review time, but I think by its nature it changes. I think perhaps a better approach is to review some concrete steps that have been taken by ICANN in its various processes to actually implement and articulate and pick up public interest issues. And the new applicant guidebook is one. The independent objector has just recently issued a number of comments in relation to the public interest objection component of the new GTLDs. I think there's a body of knowledge that's continuing to grow around that topic, and my suggestion would be focus perhaps more on that rather than continuing to define. The other point was just in relation to letting others know outside ICANN about this process, and I just wonder, I mean, there are a number of internet governance related forums happening over the span of the review team's work. Whether one might want to engage in a consultation during those, I'm not sure. But certainly those are processes by which information can be shared about the review, about how to participate in the review, and to foster and encourage, you know, more distribution of knowledge. So, you know, again, just a practical suggestion about how to perhaps bring in, you know, some of those networks. Thanks.
Thank you, Joy. And to that point, there, again, has been some discussion, even in building our calendar. We've got the IGF on our calendar as a potential place where we could meet or advance the work of the review team. This notion of outreach is squarely before us, and the balance that we're trying to understand is the charter of this review team is under 9.1 to assess, review, and make recommendations. It's not clearly within our charter to engage in some form of outreach. And even that being said, there's been some discussion recognizing that, you know, ICANN senior staff, FADI, ICANN board in its own way, engages in outreach. And if this review team were to take such steps, we certainly wouldn't want to do anything that interferes or steps on those appropriate efforts. So we're trying to think through that balance. We understand our scope of work, mm-hmm. what we're supposed to do, and stick to our knitting. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there may be ways that we can expose to the broader community from whom we're trying to get input about ICANN's accountability and transparency. So if you have further thoughts about that, we're open to hear those as well.
Sure. Thanks, Brian. And I mean, you know, there is a process by which ICANN's starting to open some new offices and some new places, perhaps, you know, some indication from the review team to staff that this might be a useful way to engage around some discussion in those amongst staff about bringing people in. Again, not so much that the review team might need to do that work if it's outside its scope, but for some innovation and creativity from how to generate inputs from staff or outside. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Paul Foody. I wasn't going to bother getting up and saying anything, but you did ask, you said if I think you're doing an awful job to get up and say you're doing an awful job. I get as bored of telling you guys to send the registrants an email as you get of hearing me saying it. You talk about the guys in this room being a disgrace and indicating a total lack of concern about accountability and transparency. But the truth is, you know, the guys outside, they've got what they want. They're not interested in accountability and transparency. And what would accountability look like anyway? Supposing this whole new GTLD thing was determined to be a complete rip-off, for want of a better word, what would the accountability look like? You guys have developed the internet. You run the internet. You guys are as untouchable as the guys on Wall Street who caused all that problem 5 years ago and have had no ramifications whatsoever. So don't condemn those guys out there because, you know, they're demonstrating what all of us know, that you guys can do what on earth you want and get away with it. Now, on a positive note, you ask how you can engage your registrants and the public at large. I registered a couple of domains yesterday, and nowhere in the registration process was it made clear what ICANN's role is. You know, I went through the whole thing. I ticked that box saying, yes, I understand the terms and conditions. Did I bother reading it? No. Does anyone bother reading it? No. If you do read it, you'll see that you probably don't understand it anyway because it's all in legalese. So I've registered a domain. I'm paying 25 cents per domain to ICANN. I have absolutely no idea, other than my own awareness of ICANN, that ICANN is involved at all. How difficult would it be for registrars, when you register a domain, to put a page explaining who ICANN is, to explaining the commitment that you're entering into? We talk about the registrant's rights and responsibilities. The rights is, you know, is great. I'd love to know what the rights are. There don't seem to be many of them if we don't even get an email from ICANN every time you decide to change the playing field. But as regards the responsibilities, you know, if you're asking registrants to be responsible, write to them. Tell them exactly what you're expecting of them. Send them an email. Even get saying, you know, ICANN would like to be able to contact you. Would you like to be able to receive an email from ICANN? This could materially affect your domain name. You know, who's going to say no? Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Caitlin Tubergen reading a question on behalf of remote participant Ron Wickersham. Is it within the scope of the ATRT to examine accountability with regard to the representation of non-commercial points of view being perhaps marginalized by the current structure of ICANN?
Thank you, Ron, for the question. I think that if the question is phrased in terms of in what way is it relevant to the accountability of ICANN to the non-commercial viewpoint, that the question does become relevant.
Thank you.
Patrick Jones from ICANN staff. When I looked at the questions that you have out here today, one of the areas that might be missing is, does the review team intend to look at the types of documents that are put to the community for input, and at what stage in document development that it's necessary to go out to the community for input? We posted quite a lot of documents for the community before this meeting and before every ICANN meeting, and is it really necessary for all of those to go out at that stage? So it may be helpful for the review team to look at that.
Thank you, Patrick. And there are elements at the high level of accountability and transparency that go to the ability of the community to comprehend what it's seeing, whether it's a question of excess volume, whether it's a question of clarity, the ability of the community member or public to comprehend what it is being provided is an element that we will assess in our work. Thank you.
Hi, Mark McFadden. I'm taking Avery up on one of her offers here, and that is, are there other questions that you should be looking into that you're not? And one of the areas of accountability and transparency that I think the ATRT, too, should actually look into, I know David will say to me, please don't go there, but the numbers part of the organization is something that doesn't get any attention. And it is a particularly opaque part of the organization. I think I would challenge any of you, well, except for David and Steve, I would challenge many of you to actually explain the relationships between the RIRs, the NRO, and ICANN. It's a very, very difficult thing to first understand and second of all explain to a normal human being. And so I think in terms of transparency and also accountability, the relationship between the Address Supporting Organization, the Address Council, the NRO, and ICANN in general ought to be something that should be on your agenda. They've just recently gone through a review process. That review process has been completed. And one of the things that, in terms of metrics, that you could look at is, has transparency actually been improved as a result of that review activity? One of the things that you could also look at is, in terms of accountability, what are the mechanisms by which general ICANN participants can participate in the work of the Address Supporting Organization, whether it's here at ICANN meetings or in general. So I suggest to put that on your plate, a look at what the relationship is between the Address Supporting Organization and ICANN at large, and whether or not ATRT2 feels like there's been an improvement made in their accountability and transparency.
Thank you very much for the suggestions and for the focus on metrics. Very welcome. Again, inputs that tie to our scope of work under paragraph 9.1 are fair game, and that's what we're looking to hear from the community, so thank you for that input. Another difficult-to-measure metric that's been brought up in the first LA meeting, but perhaps equally as important, is the issue of culture of the organization. That was asked of Fadi in Los Angeles in terms of the culture of the organization with respect to accountability and transparency. Former members, or I should say members of the review team, have articulated in the way of, if I were to walk in the halls of Los Angeles on any given day and tap someone on the shoulder, what would they say to me about how their work in front of them ties into accountability and transparency? What is their awareness level? How active are they in their understanding and integrating it to their work and the people they work with? Difficult metrics to perhaps measure with, but this aspect is as important, if not more, than any other. Inputs along those lines are welcome as well. Any other thoughts from the review team members? Or yes, please, David.
Mark, with regards to the IP addressing world of outside of ICANN, that is a topic that we've discussed internally within the review team, and it is on one of the master lists of agenda items that we're looking into.
Olivier.
Thank you, Brian. With regards to the availability of documents and the input processes into the policy process, the public consultation process. Of course, the ATRT1 had made some recommendations. Those had been carried out, or some of them have been carried out. The ATRT2 is going to look at those, and there is a specific work stream on that. So there certainly will be some focus on this.
Yeah, if I can elaborate on that one, too. It's an important one, the public input. So ATRT1 made a recommendation that ICANN should institute a comment and reply comment period and restructure the public input process. The reason we made that recommendation is there are multiple reasons. One of the fundamental challenges we identified in terms of perception within the community was this notion of a black box, that the ICANN board represented a black box in terms of decision making, that inputs came in from the community processes, from the community, that input came in from the ICANN staff, and little was known or visible about the decision that came out on the other end, or there was some opaqueness about some of the inputs from ICANN staff. Those were issues we identified. In order to attack the perception and potential real problem of the black box, restructuring the public comment period, we felt, was important. The institution of a comment period and reply comment period was important for these reasons. It forces the community, if it's used correctly, to provide an adversarial constructed base of argumentation about a given issue. It provides a broader basis of rationale to be considered by the board on a given question, so that when you provide comments, let's use vertical integration as an example, something we went through. We provide comments on that. You provide your view. Opposing parties provide their view. The reply comment cycle is intended to give you an opportunity to explain to the board why the views of your opposing party are not well-founded, to give the rationale that the board can rely on to make a fully informed decision and one that reflects the input of the community. It tied into discussions and recommendations we had about board resolutions, what should be in a board resolution. The board needs to articulate not just the decision it made and the process that it went through, but it needs to point to the arguments that it found persuasive upon which it best rests its decision. We also recommended that it was very important that the board not just point to the inputs that influenced its decision, but also those that it rejected. That as a matter of practice, this shows to the community, we've heard you. We've heard your arguments. We've decided X, here's why. We've heard the other, and we reject it for this reason. These types of practices begin the process of signaling to you that you've been heard and begins to lift the veil on the black box. That's the purpose. What we understand, or have heard, I should say, is that the reply comment cycle is not being used appropriately by the community. Comments are not being submitted that take the opportunity to take the counterarguments and to deconstruct them and provide the board with the rationale as to why your position is better founded than the counter view. This is critical to get the benefit out of this new public input process. Now, we don't know why, we haven't assessed yet why, the reply comments are not being used appropriately. It could be that the ICANN staff has communicated clearly and the community just doesn't care or is lazy or waits to the reply, or there could be a host of reasons. This is where we need input. But what I want to underscore is that this was a very important recommendation from ATRT1 that is not delivering the potential benefit. So this is something we need to get at, and we welcome all input. Milton.
Yes. Well, Brian, that was a beautiful description of how the regulatory process is supposed to work, where they get comments, they get reply comments, and they digest them, and they issue decisions which say which ones they accepted. I was just struck while you were saying all that I have actually never seen anything like that in the ICANN context. Not a single decision, I think, has the... they don't issue formal rulemakings the way, let's say, your typical regulatory institution from the U.S. that I'm familiar with would. So that's part of the problem. But I think the problem is actually more fundamental. If a U.S. regulatory institution does not do that, they can be challenged in court, and their decision can be overruled. There is no effective accountability mechanism such as that would require the board to do so. Indeed, I've been familiar just in the last 18 months or so with situations in which the board has actually, or the council, have issued decisions before the comments are even finished. And again, there's no penalty. I don't believe in it's just the community. The community will do things if they get rewarded for doing them. So if you can show that they didn't follow any kind of an analysis of the comments and that actually has an impact because a decision is reversed because of that, then the community will file comments. It will mean a lot more to do so. So that's my... And by the way, this doesn't include anything about independent review or reconsideration or ombudsman stuff. I just wondered if that was whether you thought it was encapsulated by other things.
Actually, all of those issues are encapsulated in ATRT1. So the general question about ATRT implementation of ATRT1 you should find it there. That'd be the proper place to home it. If something's missing there, let us know. Just to follow up to your point, though, Milton, and well taken. In Boston, when we met face-to-face and talked about this issue, Peter Dengate Thrash, who was a member of the review team, put a board resolution up on the wall and walked us through the elements that were in fairly recent board resolutions at that time. We then the next day put, just by way of example, a Federal Communications Commission decision up on the wall to show that structure of here's my decision, here are the arguments I've heard, here's what I've accepted and why, here's why what I've rejected and why, to demonstrate the meaning of what we thought the benefit could be. But I will say that when Peter put a board resolution up on the wall, there were some members in the room who were not aware that actually ICANN at that time was putting as much into their resolutions as we thought. So to your statement that you've never seen anything like that in an ICANN board resolution, my question back would be, can you validate that? And can you bring to us recent resolutions that are falling short of that mark for us to assess? Thank you. Bruce.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, I agree with Milton's comment that people will use forums if they think it adds value. And I think what I see happening with the reply comment, I think Steve was mentioning this earlier as well, the other things that we heard yesterday as a board member from the different constituencies in the GNSO particularly was they felt they didn't have enough time to consult with their communities to put a comment in during the first part of the period. So what ends up happening in the reply comment is often new material that different constituencies have put in. So that's one issue. And then I think the second issue is that the whole process is a little bit disconnected from the other parts of our process. So we have these different modes. You know, we have a mode where we're here face-to-face and we're interacting. And then we have a mode where we might be using reply comment, which is, if you'd like, an old way of doing things. It's a sort of a written correspondence world. Whereas many people use online chats and Twitters and a whole lot of other mediums that we don't really seem to be using at ICANN. Maybe we need to have focused periods of discussion where we open a chat room for a certain period of time and we encourage the parties to communicate. You know, I think we should be using some other ideas. But if all the real policy discussion is perceived to happen face-to-face at these ICANN meetings, people don't see the comment period as being particularly relevant because they think, really, my opportunity is to influence people while I'm here, to influence staff, to influence board members. And that's how a lot of people work. They don't use the public comments because they think the best way is to turn up to our regular meetings three times a year, and that's where they get that work done. So you never see that documented anywhere because they're doing it verbally and they're doing it in these sessions. So I think one of the things that would help in the reply or in this one medium would be to pull information into it and actually to say, this was the outcome of the open mic session at ICANN and post it into that forum so you can actually see it as a continuous piece of information. Or if the staff could give initial feedback after the first round and say, in summary, this is stuff that we think makes sense, this is stuff we don't think makes sense, then people would be more likely to engage in the reply comment period, I think. So just some ideas, but at the moment I can see why it doesn't work. It's because it's disconnected from where people think the real decisions are made.
Thank you, Bruce. Steve.
Steve Dalbianco for the business constituency. The reason it doesn't work for the business constituency has nothing to do with Bruce's reasons. Those were all good reasons. But for the BC, none of us are in the business of the DNS. We use the DNS for our business. So we're all volunteers, and we actually embraced the idea of an initial comment followed by a reply. It was a great innovation from your first team. But we quickly found we were overwhelmed with the quantity of parallel comments, and 21 days for the initial comment wasn't enough time to get approvals. It takes me 2 weeks to get an approval from members of the business constituency. That's 14 of the 21 days. I can't do it. So we started drifting our initial comments into the reply period, and that's just not fair. I realize that because others have endeavored to get their initial comment in, and here I am submitting the BC comments 2 weeks later. So the 3 plus 3 weeks is too tight for the total comment if you have 10 parallel comment processes. So either we slow everything down to stretch it out, right, or put fewer things out at a time because we can't make it work that way.
Thank you.
Good morning, Bertrand Lechapelle, ICANN board. One thing on this discussion about reply and public comments that I think is missing in the current interaction mode of ICANN is actually interaction. Let me explain. The public comment is basically someone throwing a comment at a reception box. This reception box is then studied and filtered by the staff to make a summary of comments. But there is very little interaction between the different commenters, as would be the case on a mailing list or on a working group. What I'm missing absolutely dearly on all the electronic tools for the whole community, I'm not talking about the mailing list for working groups, is this notion of thread. If somebody makes a public comment and there's a response to this public comment lower down the thread, you actually have a mechanism that is not a dialogue. It's not something where you can correct, come back and say what I meant is this or that. It's not the idea of creating an open mailing list for everybody, but in a forum like this one, when we have the physical meetings, people can piggyback and say what so-and-so said, I agree with or I don't, which you cannot do on the public forum. And so my understanding of the better contribution in terms of reply is not to have a second go at throwing something in the box. It's having an ongoing discussion beyond the work of working groups, because at the moment where it is brought to the larger public, and then you see threads emerging, some will gather real interaction, the others that are solved rapidly. Today, I spend a tremendous amount of time, as most of you must have, on the public comment regarding closed generics, which is a wonderful public comment period. I mean, the comments are very valuable. It's an immense amount of material to look at because everybody's talking in parallel. It's just like a series of speeches, one after the other. And it's very difficult to see the threads.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Marika Konings from ICANN staff, making some comments from the perspective of supporting GNSO working groups and public comments. One observation is that on the one hand we have requests for more time, but on the other hand we have a lot of pressure as well to make things move faster. So as you make recommendations in this area, I would really like you to take that into consideration, because it's really hard to balance that, where we want policy development to go fast, get recommendations up to the board, but at the same time, people want or need more time to provide comments, which, you know, is a very important part of the process as well. Another point I wanted to make is that you may want to look at as well that there are different categories of public comments. Because, for example, the way it works for GNSO working groups, when they put out a report for public comments, staff does provide a summary, but we don't typically do an analysis because we really see that as the role of the working group. What we do provide for the working group then is a public comment review tool. So we try to break out all the different comments, indicate who provided them, put a box in there that notes the working group response and also indicates what action the working group took on the basis of their review of that comment. And that is something we then include as well in the initial or final report to really demonstrate how the working group was considering those comments and how they were received. So I see the value of having response and reply, but they may be very relevant in issues where the staff is actually going to take a decision, or the board, where you want to have the dialogue. But for working groups that need to review those comments, you may want to look for another mechanism. And often we look as well for forums as here to have that interaction, and the comments are more taken back and then reviewed in a more quiet fashion, but still responses are provided and are visible. And in occasions where we know who the commenter is, if there are questions or further dialogue is needed, the working group will reach out to that group or that person to have that discussion. So.
Thanks. Very useful input. Olivier.
Thank you, Brian. Since the implementation of the new system of public comments, there have been several sessions that have taken place discussing the actual implementation of the public comment system. I remember, I think, in Prague there was one. There must have been some others before that. And this team will be looking at the input that was gathered and that was discussed at those times. It would be interesting to hear more suggestions for possible solutions to the problem we have here. I think we're quite aware of the fact that to gather more input, one might need more time, but needing more time might also delay processes that might run out of time to implement. So there certainly is a trade-off, and there doesn't seem to be a single solution that could be implemented.
Thank you. So we have 15 minutes left in this session. Again, open mic, open ideas, any input is welcome. Suggestions on what we should focus on in terms of our work?
Hi, Paul Foody again. As regards public comments, you've got a great repository of information there. Has anyone studied that to see how many of the people contributing public comments applied for TLDs, new GTLDs in the first round?
This team hasn't, but could consider that.
So you would look into seeing how, because that would give you some sort of idea, a metric, as to the incestuous nature of this whole process. Okay, because there are a very, very, this is the largest meeting that ICANN's had. It's 2,600 people. We're in a country where in the last year another 40 million people have started using the internet. The .cn domain registry is the fastest growing registry out of any registries. China is registering .com domains daily, and yet 2,600 people in a city the size of Beijing, and you're celebrating that. Quite honestly, I'd be looking at it the other way around. I'd be saying, why is it that we're not filling out, the national stadium here? Thank you.
Thank you.
Bertrand Lachapelle, I would love to make a policy development process in a stadium. That would be fun. As there is space for additional comment, one thing that came up in the discussion earlier this morning regarding policy versus implementation, and that connects basically to what was just discussed before, is how the workflow of community interaction, and I insist again on the word interaction, community interaction functions from the beginning of the moment an issue emerges to the moment it is fully in the implementation phase. The reason why it is important in multi-stakeholder processes is because we tend to forget, although we are confronted with the reality all the time, that the very nature of multi-stakeholder processes is that they do take longer, and they must take longer. I often take the analogy that just like parliamentary process go much slower than dictatorship, and I think it's a value, multi-stakeholder takes even longer than parliamentary process. And one of the challenges in ICANN, and it touches upon the accountability, is that an issue really comes on the agenda only when it has matured until everybody agrees it's urgent. This is not the way it should be brought onto the agenda. If it is really bottom-up, the notion of birds of a feather that is used intensively in the ITF, the notion of exploratory meetings where somebody just plants the flag and say, this is an interesting topic. Anybody who is attracted by the pheromone of this topic can go to this meeting and just shape out and interact with the other actors is another way. We need to enhance the early stages of issue identification and issue framing. And the only way to do this is to provide in the spaces of the physical meetings, which are the moments where we are all face-to-face, small windows for people to pitch ideas, to start discussions, to raise awareness on something, and then provide a possibility for issues to grow inside the structure. There was a discussion this morning of saying, we have a constituency day. Instead of spending ages discussing whether the organization should be constituency-based or issue-based, why not have an issue day where discussion is in open rooms, no panels, no no nothing. It's just a workshop on a topic that is not yet in a PDP. Something that says, this is an important issue, everybody who's interested about this issue comes and interacts. And the second element is more generally regarding the difference between this ATRT and the previous one. The Accountability and Transparency Review Team 1 insisted, rightfully so, on the accountability mechanisms, particularly for the board and so on. I am not sure that we have gone far enough in developing the whole accountability framework. There was a discussion this morning, and Jonathan Zuck made the analogy between the legislative and executive functions and the judiciary function. Without getting into detail, ICANN has not developed a complete appeal system, a complete dispute resolution mechanism that has a coherence from the top to the daily issues that are at stake. So if pushing the analogy, the PDPs are the legislative part, if pushing the analogy, the staff implementation like INA, new GTLD program and so on are the executive or administrative part, the part that is all the dispute resolution mechanism needs to be looked at it into a coherent model, and especially when there is a clear distinction between, for instance, appeal or reconsideration on substance and appeal reconsideration on process, which is today something that we don't distinguish enough.
Thank you very much. And to hit a couple of touch points along the way, tying your comments to our work, recommendation 6 from ATRT 1, policy versus executive function or implementation is something we will clearly look at. The PDP process is something that we are very likely to look at. And there was in ATRT 1 a discussion about a potential review mechanism, which to some degree plays into your framing there about a holistic system. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm Paul Foody again. This comes down to a dialogue. It comes down to ICANN talking to people who maybe are not a part of ICANN but whom you purport to serve. I get up in front of this mic. I've been getting up in front of this mic for 4 years. I've been speaking to you, attempting to interact with you. If you look back at all the comments I've made at public comment, the only response I get from ICANN is flip. Now, whether or not that is complete dismissal or whether or not you're agreeing totally with what I'm saying, only you have no way of accommodating my views, I don't know. But a dialogue would be a pleasant thing. If you want people to come to these meetings and tell you what they think, you've got to be prepared to listen, and you've got to be prepared to respond to them and say why what they're saying is wrong. Thank you.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Anything else, Mike?
Well, I'll take the last remark as a personal challenge, Mike Silver here. Mr. Foody, I've tried to engage you a number of times. I've spoken to you about data privacy laws in a number of countries. We've spoken about anti-spam provisions and why it would be ineffective for ICANN to engage in a bulk mailing campaign. At the same time, the suggestion has been made to you over and over that as an individual, you're welcome to your opinions. But as ICANN, we have working methodologies. And that working methodology, when it comes to generic top-level domains and GTLD policy, is to engage and work through the GNSO. So as much as your comments in the public forum alert us to a potential problem, in terms of actual practical work and making practical suggestions, that's work that needs to be done in a collegiate manner, building rough consensus in the constituency that's tasked with building policy on that specific issue. This is not an American courtroom where we will take the appeal of the best actor or the best looking lawyer, and if you make a good speech at the public forum, we're going to suddenly overrule work done and hard work done by dozens, sometimes hundreds of people over a long period of time simply because you make a compelling argument. What we're expecting you to do is go and engage those people. You make good points, but go and engage them and work through a policy process that comes up with practical suggestions, because otherwise we're going to get, again, criticized for top-down behavior, for executive action which doesn't take into account the bottom-up process. So my view is, and this has been said to you numerous times from the first meeting when you arrived and raised these complaints, work on the issue within the GNSO. The board will not simply overrule at the whim of one individual hard work and good work that's been done by people. Are there flaws? Are there concerns? Are there issues? Absolutely. Now, I think that it's a valid issue for the ATRT to look at, is how do the concerns of an individual or groups of individuals who may not be ICANN insiders and may not have a clue how to work collegiately with others in a community, how do they have a voice? My view is maybe they need to grow up and learn how to work collegiately rather than just standing here petulantly demanding that their demands are adhered to.
Thank you.
Paul Foody, may I reply to that?
The mic is yours.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to thank Mike. I do appreciate his dialogue. But to say that 4 years after being asked to send an email to every domain registrant from which you'd get 95% of your funding is unreasonable, that it's spam, I mean, that is the worst reflection on ICANN there possibly is. You've got a problem. The problem is that you are not connecting with your ground base, the 95% who give you your funding. And yet, 4 years on, you still do not have a mechanism to email, to contact those people directly. Most domain name registrants don't even have a clue what ICANN is and what it does. That is a problem. 4 years on, you haven't started addressing it, at least not until now.
Thank you. Steve.
So I'll try to give you a direct response. It's quite simple. It's outside of the rules. It's absolutely against the rules for us to do that, and it's well documented and well litigated, and it's very straightforward, which is why I might suggest that no matter how often you repeat it, you're not likely to get any traction on it. We are obliged to stay here and listen politely, and we do. But we are prohibited from going further than that because it's not actionable.
Back in Nairobi, Anthony Van Kuvering offered to send an email on behalf of the registrars to all their domain name registrants. And he was actively discouraged by Peter Dengate Thrush at the time. Now, that would have been a process. That was back in, 2010?
So just to be, let me make the point again. The rules prohibit ICANN from contacting the registrants directly. The relationship with the registrants is through the registrars. The registrars are extremely firm in wanting that relationship to be between them and their registrants. And that is very, very deeply embedded into the system. Whether it's Anthony Van Hoovering or whether it's ICANN staff or whatever, there's no mechanism available that does not cross that line. If you want to challenge whether or not that line should exist, that's a whole different discussion, but it has to be in the context of what the rules are.
How do I go about challenging whether that line should exist?
lot of different ways, but I suppose that you could go to the registrars and say, we think that you think that there's a better way for the system to work and that you want to undo their primary relationship with their registrants.
I think as a registrant, I believe that I have a right to be informed, and I can take my money, it takes the money of registrants, and it has a duty to those registrants to communicate with them. And if there is some rule that prevents you communicating with them, that doesn't seem to stop you emailing me about, you know, who is data. Why should it stop?
Something dropped right by your foot.
Why should it be such a problem with regard to this, which is a much, much more important matter?
That was ICANN communicating with the registrant, I think. Look, so I listened very carefully to what you said, and the transcript is up here. And let me deconstruct it. You refer to a registrant having a right to know what's going on. There is plenty of mechanism for the registrant to find out whatever he wants. There's plenty of information that's communicated. You can challenge whether or not it's sufficient or not, but to then move directly from that to say, therefore, ICANN must send email is a step that is not directly connected and that you've made that conclusion, but that conclusion is not warranted.
Well, I think the fact that we are, you know, here and the number of people who are engaged in this topic is such a relatively tiny number is evidence of the fact that the message is not getting out there. People are not aware of what's going on, and that is a failing. What I'm saying is you have within your resources here a perfect opportunity to contact every domain name registrant. And, you know, the fact you're not using that because of whatever rule or, you know, whatever excuse you're making, it's not sufficient.
So to borrow a somewhat famous line, yes, we could do that, but it would be wrong.
I beg to differ. Thank you.
We are just about at time. We have two people in the queue. By all means, Mikey, please, and then we'll wrap it up.
Just one comment on this very interesting exchange is that, surprisingly enough, if everybody reads the transcript, we may discover that there's much more agreement on the overall objective of engagement and that the disagreement is merely on the appropriate method. And the key question is definitely how to reach out better to registrants, who, by the way, do not have yet in the structure of constituencies of ICANN a specific constituency or house or whatever, which I've always personally found extremely strange. But this is not only about registrants, it's also about the general public and their other mechanisms and so on. So if we can take one thing out of this, is that this goes into the debate about engagement, and I would like to feed this into an operational mode, which is how can registrars and registries be part of the engagement process to allow their registrants to understand better what ICANN is about, if I reformulate correctly what Mr. Foody was asking as an objective. I agree with Steve wholeheartedly that the solution he proposes, that ICANN sends an email, is the wrong one.
Thank you. And last input.
This is Mike O'Connor. Just to respond in another dimension, one of the reasons there aren't 10 million people here is because it's really expensive to get here. It takes a lot of resources to participate in this. You know, as an ISP, I'm kind of unusual in the ISP constituent or community, because most ISPs go, why do I care about coming to an ICANN meeting? For the most part, it's not terribly important to my primary business. The only time I care is if something breaks, and then a bunch of us will show up. But you know, the holes in the logic are vast, and, you know, I agree with Bertrand, you know, one way to do this would be to lower the barrier to participation, et cetera, but, you know, Foodie's logic has got giant huge, massive holes in it. It's pretty tiresome to listen to, as many of you probably know. There you go. Sorry to be so grouchy, Paul, but, you know, I've heard your story so many times. It's just like, come on, come up with a new story.
How many people are on Adobe Connect right now? You know, how many Chinese people living in Beijing are here? No, it's not a lot of money to be here. It's people are not alert to the fact they should be here. And that's our job.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming. We look forward to your inputs. Please provide inputs with respect to the public comment questions that are outstanding. We look forward to interacting with you as we advance our work in Durban and beyond. Thank you very much for your time.